Unibet. Episode 84. Greg Holst, Puls 24 NHL Experte.
The first thing that I'm going to really remember, and probably more so now than ever, even though you hear it every year, how hard it is to win this freaking cup. The grind to win the cup, I've never really dissected it how I have now this year.
Die Tribüne erhebt sich. Und der Hexenkessel kocht. Da bleibt kein Moment, um einmal durchzuatmen. Bring it on. Mit dem Tortender! Abgefälscht und die Scheibe im Tor. Aus dem Nichts. Wie schön war das gemacht?
Unibet Hockey O'Clock. We started the Stanley Cup playoffs with him and his analysis. We're going to end the Stanley Cup playoffs with him and his analysis. Always a tremendous honor having him on Unibet Hockey O'Clock, especially this being the final episode of season number two. It's, of course, none other than Greg Holst, Coach Holst. So thankful that you're taking the time to talk one last time this year about hockey.
Well, Martin, it's a pleasure to be here, and it was exciting, I can honestly say.
Coach, we're recording this couple of hours after the Game 6 win of the Avalanche in the Stanley Cup final. What was your reaction when the final horn sounded and celebrations unfolded on the ice?
Well, when you see grown men crying that have been in this league for 10, 12, 15 years, you know how hard it is, and you know the emotion that goes into this. And what really impressed me down the stretch, they took a page right out of Tampa's playbook and shut them down with tough defense. So this high-scoring team, they found a way to shut Tampa down. Tampa didn't have a shot for 9 minutes in the third. So they can score. They can play defense. The goalie came up big when he had to. An impressive, impressive victory. But when you see grown men crying, it puts a tear in your eye because I don't exactly know, and nobody knows unless you're there, how hard it is to do what they did, or any Stanley Cup champions, what they have to go through.
And these next couple of days probably will bring a lot more injury updates and newsworthy stuff, as we had with, for example, the Edmonton Oilers, where we found out that Darnell Nurse had kind of torn a muscle off of his hip flexor, and Draisaitl played with a broken ankle. And especially on the Tampa side, I expect a lot more things to come out. But as we talk about the game and look back on game six and the defensive effort of the Avalanche in the third period, one thing immediately comes to mind, namely Mark Messier on ESPN's intermission report telling people or telling the Avalanche, basically, you need to play as if you're one goal behind and not one goal in front. And they, incredibly enough, shut down Tampa's attack. Was that championship-winning hockey in its essence?
Well, if you look at their scoring, like, I mean, Nashville, 7-2, 7-3, 5-3, the first game in the final, 7-0. But now, they did take a page out of Tampa's playbook. And what I mean by that is, yeah, they didn't just sit back and play 1-2-2 neutral zone. They kept pushing. They got on top of Tampa as soon as they could. They shut down the neutral zone. But what did they learn from Stamkos in this series? Well, in the third period, Landeskog blocked a shot and crawled off the ice with the help from MacKinnon. Then MacKinnon blocks a huge shot from Kucherov. So a la Stamkos, these top players in the world started blocking shots, and that's what it takes. And like Mark Messier says, I mean, it's not about scoring goals at that point. It's about blocking shots, being warriors. And they took a page. They learned that over the years. And what a third period they had. Joe Sakic even said after the game, that third period was a fantastic period, and end result, they won the cup.
We're recording this conversation a couple of hours after the Avalanche's win And we're doing so with kind of a sad face, because obviously we would have been on the call for game six for Pulse 24. But the station decided to move all the broadcasts after game three, which was the last one that we did with the German commentary crew, over to the stream and just airing it with English commentary. So yeah, got to respect that decision. Still would have been great to be on the call.
And well, I was ready. I know you were ready, and I know we were both ready.
And this is kind of our group therapy, isn't it?
It's group therapy, and it would have been exciting. I mean, game 5-2, 5-6, fantastic games. We were ready to go. It's disappointing that it didn't happen, but like you say, we have to handle it with respect, and at least we have the opportunity to watch it on television from Canada. So it's too bad that, you know, we didn't finish the job, because we had a lot of fun doing this last couple of years, the NHL. I think we had a great time, and I know we had some outdoor games and lots of fans and made comments to me. I know personally how much they enjoyed it. So it's unfortunate, but life goes on.
Most definitely. And that's why we talk a little bit about the finals, dissect them, not only the finals, but also the playoffs. We're not going to get into your picks, which obviously weren't too great, not to get too far ahead of ourselves. And at the back end of this conversation, we're going to have a little outlook on the upcoming ice season, with the offseason being in full swing and more signings obviously coming out. But one thing that struck me and that stayed with me after the game was an interview conducted by Emily Kaplan, who asked Gabriel Landeskog if there are any lessons for other teams, as the National Hockey League is a copycat league, to take away from Colorado's win. And he said, well, go out and try and find yourself a Cale Makar. Is it that simple, or are there other lessons to learn for the 31 teams that didn't hoist a cup?
Well, it's funny you say that, because I look at all the teams sitting at home that are trying to make the playoffs, trying to build the team, trying to win a cup. They have to watch us, and they have to be saying to themselves, holy loving, what do we have to do? We're not close. We are close. We're going to have to sacrifice. When Cooper mentioned that half the team would not be playing if it was a regular season, are other teams willing to be the warriors that these teams are? And Tampa, definitely number one. And Colorado definitely learned over the years from Tampa. So all the teams must be looking, God, are we close? How do we build our team? Look at the management, both managements, how they picked up the right players at the right moments after losing players. So management in both of these situations, absolutely fantastic. So not only the players, but I think management is going to look at the patience they had with Bedden. 48 points in his first year. They could have fired him. That's what Landeskog said too. But they had the patience. They built it up. Cooper's the same. They had patience with these guys, even though in Cooper's first year, he went to the finals. There was patience. So what can you say about Joe Sakic and company and the management from these teams? It's absolutely fantastic.
Patience, one of the lessons, having a great blue line defenseman, Cale Makar, and that's something that the Unibet stats have also shown, just became the first one to win the Hobie Baker Award for the most valuable player in college hockey, the Conn Smythe, the Norris, and a Stanley Cup. So a record-breaking season for Cale Makar. Always a pleasure seeing him play, and I dug a little deeper and went back to the 2017 NHL entry draft. He was pick number 4.
Yes.
Nico Hischier, Nolan Patrick, and Miro Heiskanen went right in front of him. If that draft were to be conducted again, is there any question about the number 1 overall pick?
Not even a question. It should have been Makar. But here's something very interesting, Martin. You know where he was drafted from?
NCAA. UMass.
No. He was drafted right out of the second junior league.
Right. And then went to the NCAA.
Then he went 1 year to college. So I think he had 75 points in that junior A league, which is a fast league. It's not like the WHL or the top junior leagues.
The Alberta Junior Hockey League.
Yes. And that was, I think, the Brooks team, right?
Correct. Brooks Bandits.
So they saw something big time. So did that scare off three other managers? Obviously, it did. And here's another one. There's only two other guys that have won the Conn Smythe and the Norris in the same year. Lidstrom in Detroit.
And Bobby Orr.
Two times Bobby Orr. And now Makar is in with these guys, and he's 23 years old. What a story. What a player.
And he's going to be there for a very long time and going to make Avs fans very happy.
Can I add something here, Mark? Sorry to interrupt.
Sure.
It caught my guard. Byron's 19. Gerard's young. He didn't even play. Their defense corps is fantastic for years to come. Now, is this going to be the next Tampa Bay? Are they going to run with this for a few years? They've got a pretty good opportunity. It's going to be really interesting. Are they going to be worse next year? Okay, Kadri's a free agent. They have a few free agents to sign. But Joe Sakic, these guys are smart guys. If they lose a player or two, they will find ways to compensate.
Now, as we marvel at the Cale Makars of this world, and we, of course, know that Landeskog, Rantanen, MacKinnon, they're great offensively, but is one takeaway from this Avalanche team and this Stanley Cup winning campaign that you can get by in the playoffs with not top of the league goaltending? I don't want to call it average, but Kemper and Francouz didn't exactly look like world beaters, and they didn't have to be.
You said it right. They and all the guys, all the interviews, all the experts, they all said he doesn't have to play fantastic. Just play a solid game, which he did in the last game. You know what he is after a loss in the playoffs? His record? He's 4-0. So he's kind of following Vasilevsky's steps. He played a solid game tonight, right? A solid game. So the team can score, but now we saw they can play defense and they can block shots with the best of them. So that is what you need to win the cup. That's why they won the cup. Because a couple of those block shots at the end, maybe they go in. So the other side of a player like Makar, sure, every team wants him. But let's look at Tampa. They said they weren't even the better team against Toronto. But they have the intangibles and the goaltending, and they have they find a way to win when they're not the best team. Toronto, they talked about Toronto was a better team. So is it experience? Okay, what do you think Matthews, MVP of the league, 60 goals, Marner, over 100 points, all these star players. What do you think? I wonder what they think when they watch Stamkos, Rantanen, MacKinnon, all these top players blocking shots. Are they going to learn from this? Because Cooper also said, and you know the story, we talked about it on television, when the Islanders won their fourth cup back in the day, 40 years ago, Gretzky and company lost out and they all walked by with their suits on by the room of the New York Islanders. And they looked inside and they weren't even partying. They were freaking ice packs and they were beat up. And that's what Gretzky and Cooper said this on TV. He never forgot that. And that is the reason Gretzky and company turned it around the next year and got a hell of a lot grittier. And that's what Tampa is. And Avalanche are going to copy that. And boy, they're going to be a tough team to beat again next year. You know what's really hard? They were picked number one from the start. And they went through this. They have the most points tied in the history of playoffs and in the season. So for them to be favored from day one, I know I doubted them. I think you doubted them. I picked Calgary. You picked Tampa. So what can you say about the storylines, about Eric Johnson? You know his story, right? You know, being bankrupt years ago and losing all his money. And he spoke tonight, and he actually put a tear in my eye talking about his parents and family being there, even though everything they went through, and how hard it is to win, and it's like it's not real for these guys. It's unbelievable. It really is unbelievable. The storylines.
And of course, everything unfolds right after the cup is hoisted first by the captain, which was done by Gabriel Landeskog. And then the big question always is, who gets the cup second? And there was a little debate, might be McKinnon, but Landeskog left no doubt that it would get to or into the hands of the longest tenured Avalanche player, Eric Johnson, first overall draft pick, 1.5 decades basically ago. Good choice for the second cup hoister.
Well, if I remember right, he was drafted by St. Louis one, was he? And he played 12 years in Colorado. Or regardless of the story, he's played 12 or 13, 14, whatever it is. And the guy, they give him the cup, and he went through back in the day, lost all his money, went bankrupt. He owed $10 million after making millions. So to find a way back and to rebuild your family and reorganize your private life and to get through that as he has done and how he spoke with tears in his eyes, what does it tell you about these athletes? It's a lot more than just playing the game. There's a lot of stuff that goes into this. This is freaking... These guys, I know warriors, you hear them. They are warriors. I mean, they're beat up. They play. They got no teeth. And then they win. And then they cry. It's freaking unbelievable. That's why I'm so passionate about hockey, how much I love this. And you see the coaches talk and Bednar's talking. And he said, I can't even... He never played in the NHL. He played in the East Coast League. He played in the AHL. Then he became a coach and he won in the AHL. Now, after all these years, I think six, they didn't give up on him. And he's now become the perfect coach with his demeanor for this team. So hats off to Joe Sakic and their management and ownership. And they've done just a fantastic job. And Colorado now has 3 Stanley Cups, and several teams have 0. So quite an organization, that's all I can say.
The lesson, as always, with the Stanley Cup and the Stanley Cup playoffs, you have to experience setbacks. You have to be ousted earlier than a lot of people expected it to kind of learn from your mistakes and trying to be there the year after. After 3 straight second round losses for the Avalanche, was this the year where they finally learned their lesson?
They learned their lesson just like Tampa did in 2019. They were the best team in the league by far. They're up 3-0 in the game against Columbus and they got swept. That didn't sit well and they bounced back big time. And I guess you have to go through these learning experiences. But on the other side, after last year, they were missing something, right? They talked about it. Sakic and company, they had to get something. So they picked up, you know, this Josh Manson, big, strong, he fit in absolutely perfect. And the moves that they made, like picking up Lekkonen from Montreal, got big goals. They made some fantastic moves. Cogliano, Helm. They did what Tampa does. Tampa loses 3 top players and they pick up the right guys. Nick Paul, he's a star player now. Did you ever hear about him before? No, so these are what these organizations do. They find the right players that fit in to what they're trying to get done. So every great team, and all the coaches say it, every great team, the coaches all say this. What great ownership and great management. And this is a perfect example with both these organizations.
And Arturi Lehkonen, the scorer of the Stanley Cup clinching goal and what playoffs he had. And he's got a knack for big goals. Overtime game winner in game 4 in the Western Conference Finals. Last year, he had an overtime game winner in game 6 of the third round. Yeah, he's incredible. So knack for big goals and he did fit in seamlessly. Now,
okay,
is he...
okay, Martignan, he's a fantastic defensive player. So is he following the footsteps of Palat? Big goals, great defensive player. You don't hear much about him. That's a hell of a compliment to be considered. I'm just saying, if you're considered to be like Palat. So I'd say he's on his way. And what a pickup for Tampa. Here's a guy they have to try to keep, right?
And Palat is the perfect segue into the next segment of our conversation as we talk a little bit about the Tampa Bay Lightning. And I want to keep it fairly general at the start. How long do you think Tampa's championship window is going to remain open?
Well, Stamkos after this said he had tears in his eyes. It's like they expected to win, and he gave the abs. He said, "Yeah, they were the better team, but we expect to win this game. We expect it to win. We expect to win." And he said, "We are not done." So, what does that say when the captain says that? Is it going to be tough? Yeah, they'll make some moves. They will. They'll find a way. And don't forget, they have Vasilevskiy. If you go back to the Toronto series, or any series, if you traded goalies, who wins series? So as good as they are and as tough as they are, they've got Vasilevskiy in nets. So one of the biggest reasons they won the last two Cups is obviously because of Vasilevskiy, and that's no different. This team needs great goaltending. Colorado's built different because they're deeper with star players. They need good goaltending. Tampa needs great goaltending. So, interesting. But here's something that I was thinking about this morning and yesterday, and I actually, talk out loud. They're going to need 1 month off, right? Some guys more, to heal their bodies. Just, go to the beach, walk the beach, just do casual, give their bodies a total rest. Now, you're almost at the end of July. And now you have August and September to build up your body. That's a tall mountain to climb. They've played 71 playoff games in the last 3 years. That's the most in the history. So a mountain to climb, but they're a resilient group and they're warriors and they're going to come back and they're not going to be the best team in the league, just like this year. We didn't talk about them, but they're going to be a really good team again. Their window's open because they're going to make some good moves. I'd say they have a 3-year window.
And the Atlantic just getting more and more competitive. Florida probably with now Paul Maurice as their head coach being as competitive as ever. Toronto, Tampa not going anywhere. Boston probably dropping a little, but with Buffalo and Detroit and their
getting better
rebuilds closing in on an end, you might think that this could be top to bottom the best division in the NHL.
Well, it's going to be, like you say, from day one, it's going to be it's interesting. I mean, the Rangers are not going away. And, Boston's going to be in trouble. Bergeron's likely going to sign for 1 year, but they're missing Marchand, McAvoy for 6 months. That's going to be a tough one for those guys, right? New coaching. I think Vegas is going to kind of rebound a little bit. But I tell you, if you look at Tampa, it's going to be a grind. And it's going to be exciting again next year. The parity in the league is fantastic. And that's why it's impressive to do what they've done. The league is so close. But what can you say? What an organization. And these guys are generally upset and crying because they didn't win. So what does that tell you about their leadership?
Very good leadership and obviously very good decisions by management, because most of the core under contract for at least one more year, with two exceptions. Obviously, Nick Paul, trade deadline acquisition from the Senators, and André Palat, they don't have a contract for next year. If you were only able to keep one of those two players, which one's going to be?
Well, you have to keep Palat. He's just done too much over the years. 12 game winning goals in the playoffs, number one. giving up Paul, you have to try to find another guy like Paul, which is tough to find. This guy became a star player. All of a sudden, he's playing over 20 minutes a game. He took the most faceoffs, him and Stamkos, almost every faceoff. So they're going to try, obviously, try to find a way to keep Paul. They are really going to. They're going to have to make a couple moves. They're going to have to make a couple moves to rekindle this fire, but they're going to have a short summer again, and it's going to be their bodies are beat up. And when Cooper said after the game, and he had all this coaching staff right on the conference, and it looked like they were all going to cry. This is incredible. He said, I have no speech prepared. I thought we were going to win. But if this was a league game, half our team would not be playing, half the AHL team would be playing. And Maroon said, when you see the injury report that's going to come out, you're going to be shocked.
One person we need to talk about, a person that has played all the 105 games that Tampa played this year, 82 in the regular season, 23 in the playoffs, according to the Unibet stats, is, of course, Corey Perry. Third straight trip to the Stanley Cup Finals with three different teams, all losses. How brutal is that?
Well, you know, funny you say that, because when he was shaking hands, he was crying. And they showed a picture in the stands of his son and his wife, and the wife was freaking crying her eyes out. So how much does it mean to these guys, and how much do they sacrifice? But he won a cup in Anaheim, right? So even though he has that in his pocket, and you can never take that away, he wants to win so bad, but he's got another year in his contract, and he's one of those guys. He's one of those X factors that he's a playoff guy, but how much does it mean when his wife's crying, he's crying, shaking hands? It's freaking incredible. Like, it's, these guys are wealthy people that has nothing to do with money. They don't get paid in the playoffs for 2.5 months. So it puts a freaking tear in your eye, and it shows you have to respect these guys. Incredible what they do with their bodies. They put their bodies on the line to win a Stanley Cup, and has nothing to do with money. It's just the drive to win. It's incredible.
Now, we recorded a conversation 1.5 months ago at the start of the playoffs. Four rounds later, a lot of things happened, a couple of upsets, and then again, the team that most people, most experts had as favorite indeed won the cup. If we look in years past or at years past, teams like the Avalanche had to get over the hump. I already mentioned the three consecutive second round exits till they won the big one just a couple of hours ago, Washington, and getting over their Pittsburgh hump, kind of to win a Stanley Cup comes to mind. Looking at this year's playoffs, is there a team where you think they started paying their dues? A team that might be the next one to get over that hump, to get to the finals and to win the cup?
Yeah, St. Louis. I mean, they beat Nashville 7-2, 2-1, 7-3, 5-3. Okay, a couple of games were close, but no, Nashville was not a match. Now, St. Louis, with their deep cadre and Binghamton now playing at the height of his, like he did when they won the cup, all of a sudden, they have 920 goal scorers. So this team's deep and they battled. So all of a sudden, against St. Louis, they went six games. This was freaking tight. I mean, their last win was 3-2 in St. Louis to win in six. And Kadri kind of, you know, unintentionally ran the goalie, Binghamton, and put him out. If Binghamton doesn't go down, Colorado was not a shoe-in to win this series. It was going to go seven. So getting through St. Louis kind of set them up for how Tampa plays once Tampa got back to playing how they could after the first two games. So then they come to Edmonton, 8-6, 4-0, 4-2, 6-5. Completely different series. where Edmonton could not shut them down and not play proper defense. And the goaltending was suspect. So the biggest obstacle from head to toe that had won a Stanley Cup in the last few years was St. Louis. And if Kadri doesn't kind of bang into Binghamton, that series could have gone either way. So that tested, that was a test for Colorado. 100% test. Because if you look at the last couple of games in this series, these games were tight and they played great defense, blocking shots, just like Tampa did when Tampa was successful.
Now the entire National Hockey League focus kind of shifts over to the NHL draft. And for a second time in 3 years, Austria has expects to have a high first round draft pick. Of course, Marco Rossi going ninth in 2020. And Marco Kasper may be a top 10 bound pick in this year's NHL entry draft. I give you the top 10 teams in the 2022 NHL entry draft. And it's probably not going to go top three, top four, but depending on which kind of mock drafts you're following or you're consuming, the Marco Kasper or the teams that show interest in Marco Kasper could be starting right around five or six. What would the best situation for him be? I give you the 10 teams that pick in this order on July 7th, when the draft heads to Montreal. First overall pick, Montreal. Second overall pick, New Jersey. Third overall, Arizona. Fourth, Seattle. Fifth, Philadelphia. Sixth, Columbus Blue Jackets. Seventh, the Ottawa Senators. Eighth, the Detroit Red Wings. Ninth, the Sabres. Tenth, Anaheim.
Well, what I like to see?
Yes.
You're gonna go, really? And there's a reason for it. I'd like to see him go to Philly.
Really?
And I'm gonna tell you why. Tortorella, I know you love him or hate him, but he's a freaking tough coach and he's gonna get the best of every freaking guy. And if Kasper's on his game, he's gonna get rewarded. If he's off, he's gonna hear about it. And there's room. There's room for a young player. He's big, he's strong. You're going to be tested. Your will is going to be tested. Is he mentally strong enough to handle Torts? Ottawa's got an up-and-coming team with some star players. He would fit in nice there, fit in Columbus, yeah. But what coach can get a young guy? Torts has changed a little bit. I just saw a big interview with him. He said, I'm not going to change. I love my players. I'm going to push my players. I'm going to tell them the truth. We have to. He said, Aikenson, who plays in Philly, played for him for 6 years, right? And he said, I'm so happy Torts is coming because he taught me you don't practice just to practice. You practice to get better and you practice tough. So what would a young player need coming in? It'd be a challenge, but I think Columbus or Ottawa, Ottawa's got a great young team too with lots of star players. And they're on the rebuild, Columbus too. Who was after Ottawa?
Detroit, Buffalo, Anaheim. Three intriguing teams, I have to say.
Well, you know, if you go Philly, Columbus, Ottawa, Detroit, they all have reasons where he could fit in. But what kind of coach are they going to have? Now, Trotz is out of the picture. Who's going to coach Detroit?
So you like no to one see, knows yet.
Yeah, so you like to see who's going to coach where. So Philly's going to come back. They're going to be a way better team. I will put money on it that they're going to be a better team. You know, they're going to be, they had a couple key injuries last year. They are now wide awake for training camp, believe me. And why is that? Why did they give Tortorella a 4-year contract? Trotz was their first pick. They offered him $7 million. Trotz is getting out of hockey, family reasons, 4-year. So why did they go after Tortorella? Because it's simple. He said, our players need a kick in the ass. That was factually said. So he's got the, do you think the players are going to come in shape? I 100% they're coming in shape. So love Tortorella or hate him for a young, if he can if Kasper does happen to get picked, or I'm not sure what the team's looking for, I think he's going to be a fit anywhere, but any of these teams have room for a young player. You can't go to a top contender because there's no room. So wouldn't that be something? You think he'd be on his toes if he went fifth to Philly? What do you think? What's your read on that?
I do think he's going to be picked somewhere around 8, 9, 10-ish. And that's why I said all the situations would be intriguing. Because you could make the case that Detroit, Buffalo, and Anaheim are all on the uptick. San Jose, not really. Columbus, probably a year or two and two or three good additions away. And then at 13, the Islanders. And I mean, we all know what the Islanders need. Offense. And Kasper would create that.
Well,
so who knows?
Yeah, who knows and whatever. But I'm just saying, who coaches these teams? They're all good coaches. Like you say, Buffalo, the young players love the coach, right? So if he happened to go there, would that be a fantastic fit? A completely different look. How mentally strong is Kasper? I don't know him. I've seen him play when he was young and stuff. I don't know him personally. If he went to play for a coach like Tortorella, is that a better fit for him? Or going to Buffalo and playing for that coach who really is great for young guys? So two different looks. Both would be great. You know, you got Yzerman looking down, talking to you in training camp if he's in Detroit. Does that not get you motivated? So there's all different factors of how I see it. But if he's a mentally strong guy and wants something bad enough, you want a coach that's going to push you, right? You really want a coach because this year Philly was not pushed. They were a pushover. They had injuries. No, they talked about it. We weren't in good enough shape. We weren't tough enough. We had no identity. Well, they're going to have an identity now. So, and Detroit, whoever they get to pick, you have Yzerman looking down upon the situation. So, first of all, if he goes top 10, it's going to be another fantastic story for an Austrian player. I think no matter where he goes, he's going to be excited. He's going to be in shape. It's going to be very interesting. And now, to the other fellow, Rossi, who's gone through an awful lot in the last 2 years, learned this year how tough it is to play against men, had a really good season for the most part. Going to be interesting how he bounces back in training camp. It's going to be really interesting because he's going to be ready. You know his work ethic.
And there are jobs to be won in Minnesota. If you believe the rumors, it's going to be awfully hard to be keeping the core together, especially with the buyouts for Parisi and Suter kicking in next year. So hopefully we're going to have two NHL players on top of or in addition to Mickey Raffel, but his situation remains unclear as well. Obviously a coaching change already in Dallas with Rick Bonnes retiring or not coaching again and Peter DeBoer coming in. So a lot of moving parts, bits and pieces that we're trying to dissect whenever things happen. Obviously, the podcast coming back sometime in August, and there's so much hockey to be talking about. But as we kind of close the book on the 2021-2022 NHL season, what's the one thing that's going to remain for you for this season that's going to come to mind first when thinking back of the year?
The first thing that I'm going to really remember, and probably more so now than ever, even though you hear it every year, how hard it is to win this freaking cup. McKinnon's his ninth year, he's 26 years old. And guys are there, some guys play 20 years. You see grown men, 35 years old, crying. The grind to win the cup, I've never really dissected it how I have now this year with Tampa beat up, with their lack of summer preparation because they're in the finals every year. The dedication from day one, Joe Sakic, from day one, this team was absolutely dedicated to each other to win. I am so impressed and how hard it is to win a cup. That's what stands out to me. It's absolutely incredible.
And it just sent shivers down my spine when I saw Phil Pritchard unpacking the Stanley Cup and just thinking back of March when we stood next to the trophy and obviously where I was able to conduct a long interview with Phil Pritchard and if you think about the history of the cup, the significance and you put it perfectly, just how hard it is to even advance one round in the playoffs, but to win four when stakes are the highest, pressure is biggest, absolutely incredible and so well deserved for all the Avalanche players, staff, organization. And the great thing is next year there's going to be another National Hockey League season. We're really looking forward to following the league then. But before the National Hockey League kicks off, the Ice Hockey League back in Austria will commence its season in September. I think the opening weekend has already been set. Should be the 16th of September, if I'm not completely mistaken, a Friday where league action kicks off. And it's been an interesting offseason. Obviously, two new teams that we get in the Ice League, the Pioneers for Alberg out of Feldkirch and Asiago Hockey. What do you think of those two additions?
Well, I think for Alberg having a team, I think it's fantastic. I mean, Dornbirn has now moved over. So, you know, Feldkirch has quite a tradition. So I think it's going to be exciting. They're going to have a lot of Austrian players playing. So it's good for the league. It's good for Austria. And Asiago coming in, they were always a very good team. So now you have Pustertal, Bolzano, Asiago, three good rivals right there, you know, in Italy. And Bratislava, they're back, right? They're going to be a good, solid team too. So the league is going to be pretty interesting with different storylines, obviously.
From all the signings that we've seen so far, a lot of them, of course, it's June looking solid, and September, October, and the following months will show if they are indeed solid. But from all the signings that you kind of followed so far, is there one that stands out for you?
Well, I think Salzburg did some good moves. You know, they, you know, signing Robertson, this guy, remember a couple of years ago, this guy was absolutely fantastic in Bozen. And they had Brennan sign and Laverty without clauses. So now you had Robertson, Brennan, Laverty, Kancik. What a top four. So they lost Brennan, they lost Laverty, but they signed two other really good defensemen. I don't have their names off top. I found out two great defensemen. And now they've assigned a player out of the KHL who is NHL, KHL experience. So Salzburg's going to be the team to beat. They have the best goalie in the league. Well, Tolvanen, he's right up there. With, you know, Kickard as a backup with Kirschbaumer as the goalie coach. So they're going to be the team to beat again.
And the defenseman that you just alluded to there, Che Genaway. I think he is the latest signing. Tyler, yes. Lewington and Dennis Robertson, that's a formidable top three with Dominik Heinrich and the young guns right behind them. Salzburg again stacked as things go. But if we start looking at off seasons outside of Salzburg, any teams moves that you found interesting?
Well, I think Faber did lose a couple of players in there. Their goalie Tyrannen went to Lynch, right? So I think Constantine stayed on as coach. So they're going to build a good, solid team. And their final run, the excitement that's in the city, new rink coming up, they're going to have a real good team. So looking at Felak made a good move, solidifying their goaltending. Signing Lamoureux, they know exactly what they're getting. I've coached this guy. I talked to Kershi about him. You know what you're getting every day, every game. And he's going to be great for Schmidt. Schmidt's going to follow his footsteps. and they're basically the same size. So it's going to be interesting. That solidifies them. If you like guys made some good solid moves, they're going to be, if they're healthy, they're going to be a good team. Hard say now. They didn't make a whole lot of big moves from what I know or what I've read or what I gather. Can they regroup with the group they have? A lot of guys kind of, they looked a little bit tired at the end. Something was missing at the end. You know, was it the cup runs a la Tampa? Cartier, are they going to be able to rebound? I think they're going to rebound. Are they going to be enough to beat the top teams? Interesting. The Capitals were beat up at the end last year. They're going to be also a team, you know, they're going to be solid. So I think all the top teams aren't going to change that much. Boston, we don't know much going on there. They've only got about 7 or 8 guys signed. Is that correct now at this point?
As usual.
Pustertal, they're going to be like last year. They're going to be a solid team. They ran out of juice at the end. The goalie just ran out of stuff. So I think the top four, you know, you're looking at Salzburg, Fehervar, Filak, Cartier, Bratislav is going to put, yeah, there's going to be some surprises. I did text with Philip Lucas yesterday. You know, they've got Nash coming on board to help with the scouting. So that's a great team. They're going to be competitive. He's going to have them in shape. You know, it's hard to compete with the top teams financially. We understand that. But he's going to put a good product on the ice, and he's going to be a good coach. It's going to be a team that's in shape, and they're going to have some big wins along the way. So it's going to be an exciting year again.
Most definitely. And the good thing for our dear friend Phil Lucas, can't get any worse. Well, that's what we thought a year ago with Linz, and then they repeated or had another historically bad season. But with Phil and some organizational changes, I think Linz is going to be on the upswing again. But to round this out, Salzburg, team to beat, bullseye on their back?
I'd say, Salzburg's going to be the team to beat. And they're going to tell you that, just like they did last year. This is just like the Avalanche. The Avalanche said, hey, we're favorite. We want to be number one. We're going to win. Salzburg said last year, we have one goal, is to win. Second place is not acceptable. But I tell you what, in that finals against Fehervar, that was not a, I know they swept the series, but you know what? That was not a sweep series. The difference was a couple goals just squeaking through the five hole of Tironen. It was that close. So I think Salzburg also learned that it's not going to be a cake run. They will be the team to beat. They're going to tell you that. They have one goal, is to repeat. And every team is going to be chasing them. There are going to be some great games. It's going to be, the NHL is going to be fantastic. And so is the Ice League. It's going to be great. I know the season just ended, but I'm looking forward to it already.
I couldn't put it any better. Obviously, a long season indeed has concluded with the hoisting of the Stanley Cup. And in round about a month, teams are hitting the ice again to get ready for the Ice Hockey League. What will you be up to in during your quote-unquote vacation in summer?
Well, I'm heading to Canada on July 4th to spend some quality time with my parents and family and friends in Montreal, where I grew up. So a lot of my buddies are waiting for me too, as my family is. Then I'm going to head out to Kelowna, where I spent 26 years and I have lots of friends out there and family. Spend a couple weeks there. I will be enjoying Montreal, downtown Montreal. I really am going to, I'm looking forward to it. I will be on the ice with a couple young groups. They asked me to. My nephew's son's, he's 15. He's going to that big Boston tournament. So I will be working with a couple young players. I will be looking for some new exciting drills to help out with the Filak kids next year. So I'm going to be busy. I'm going to be working out, staying in shape. So when I come back next year, I'm going to be ready to go.
Great stuff. Coach, thank you so much for all you've done this year. Always great talking hockey with you, picking your brain, sharing laughs, and very much looking forward to do so again come September.
Martin, thank you very much. And it's been a pleasure. And like you say, we did have a good time. And it's quite something what the NHL just presented on TV. And I tell you what, it's going to stick with me for a few days. How how tough it is to win the Stanley Cup.
Exzellente Unterhaltung mit dem schönsten Sport der Welt.
Unibet Hockey on the Clock.